Oh, what fresh hell is this?
This is the Cigar Tipsters Podcast.
One free box of Pat Sherman's. That'd be nice.
Yeah. Can I have $5 off the cigar?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be nice. I think, didn't they make their empire from cigarettes first and then went to cigars, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes. Yeah, cigarettes was their bread and butter, and I'm sure to some extent still is, but I know there was a job posting sometime last year when I was looking, and it was like Nat Sherman salesman, and I was like, oh, that'd be kind of cool, and then I started reading, and they're like, you'll need to be an expert in cigarettes, and I'm like, okay, I know nothing.
not enough to want to go through and promote. I mean,
yeah, that would
feel
been
like cigars for.
That would have been a weird interview question. What do you know about cigarettes? And I would have been like, you sell cigarettes? I'm just here for the cigars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cigarettes are kind of like the problem right now for cigars. I don't know if there's anything I want to study on them. It's like the whole point. I mean, the whole point is we're trying to get a separation between cigars and cigarettes. Now, I'm sure Nat Sherman uses luxury tobacco, but at the end of the day, it's still cigarettes.
I don't know. I've just never understood I'd never smoked anything really until a cigar, and I just never understood the appeal of cigarettes. Like, it's kind of the same thing like meth and cocaine and all that shit. I mean, there's been thousands of videos and pictures that show what it's going to do to you.
Yeah.
So I don't understand the appeal of, oh, I'm going to go out and I'm going to get a cigarette, or as they say in England, smoke a fag.
Smoke a fag, right. What I'm thinking is that when you do like cigarettes or heroin, it's not about enjoying the smoke, really. It is for like a brief time, but it doesn't have the same biphasic properties and the time invested as a cigar is made to. It's almost like eating a very exclusive dessert or meal. It's something you take time out of your day because you can't rush it. A cigarette you can rush. You can take 10, 11 puffs, throw the butt in the ground somewhere and leave. Cigars are an experience. You don't really experience a cigarette. You have to supply. It's something that your body's as like, I need this in order to function. Whereas a cigar is, you know, I don't get withdrawals. Like if I don't have a cigar for a few days, if I go 2 weeks without a cigar, it's like, well, this sucks because I really want one. But my body isn't like, hey, if you don't do this, I'm going to give you night sweats and you're going to be ornery and you're going to slap your wife. And it doesn't do any of that. You know, it's just something you want to enjoy. And that's what I like about it. It forces you to relax.
It's like that Family Guy bit where they're imitating Wilford Brimley. And he's like, I have diabetes and I just struck my wife.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's something to the effect of, and then I'm told I don't have a wife. Who did I hit?
That struck my wife. That's all. I didn't have a wife. Who the hell did I hit? I forgot about that, Wolf and Grimley. By the way, have you seen the Viaje releases its first craft series? Have you seen that article?
No, I haven't.
It's called Bales on Bales.
Interesting.
Viaje, of course, is LA-based, and it... they didn't do any type of marketing or campaign or anything. They just literally made the cigars and then just put it out there. What I'm reading here is that they look like they just released it because they didn't want the pomp and circumstance, where they literally want to say, this is a really good cigar that we made and we just want people to enjoy. We don't want to like, hey, everybody, take a look. You know, they're trying to keep the simplicity of it. And I guess I can kind of respect that.
Yeah, I was about to say the same thing. I'm kind of digging that idea of just throwing it out there like, hey, try this.
Well, I also like it because if you're spending money on the research, development, production, agronomy, you're spending all the money to make the cigar, then that's more money dedicated to making the quality cigar and less spent on the marketing. Well, Camacho does a ton of marketing. Now, I'm not saying they have bad smokes by any means, but I prefer a humble approach to the Padron approach, you know, where it's just a guy in a basement with a roller because he's focused on only one thing. He has no choice but to improve his quality and focus on that. When they start getting this whole Gurkha, you know, and even to a degree Rocky Patel, and they start doing all this mass marketing, it focuses on the flair, and it's almost as if they could sacrifice on quality. They sometimes do and sometimes don't. But I like a company that says, this is what we do. We only focus on making good quality smokes. And, you know, we don't need all the giant fanfare about it.
Yeah, because realistically with, and I don't think Alan's going to make it, so we're just going to kind of talk this one out versus
that's fine.
Going specifically into topics. But I think when you get into the Rockies and the Camachos and the Gurkha, you get to a point where the only thing they're selling is the brand. You could call it, and seriously, no pun intended when I say this, you could call it the Gurkha pile of poop, and nobody cares what the cigar is called. They just care that it's a Gurkha.
Yeah. And one thing I've also noticed is I think they are abusing the privilege of the name just because it's out there so much. I find that a lot of companies that do that have such a wide band of a variety of cigars, which isn't always a bad thing, but it also means that it's difficult to maintain top quality on each line when you have such a vast portfolio. I would rather you have a smaller portfolio and more focused on quality control than just saying, let's just have a variety of 30 cigars to shotgun blast all of the as many people as we can. And it's kind of like, well, if this doesn't work, we'll try this. If that doesn't work, we'll try this. I'm like, no, just focus. I'd rather you have four cigars, four lines that you just do wonderfully. The 1502, Enrique Sanchez, he does not have a giant array or huge portfolio, but what he does make is outstanding. I've not had a bad 1502 in my life. Not the Emerald, not the Sapphire, definitely not the XO, because he only focuses on one thing. And I don't see him with giant billboards and I don't see him in Cigar Aficionado magazine. I don't see him anywhere except where he belongs, and that's in the fields or in his office or out in shops promoting. But he focuses on the quality of the cigars, and that's why I like his approach rather than just drugs. Like, well, we have 50 different lines, and we're just going to – you pick one, yeah.
Or with Enrique, coming on our show and talking, cheap plug, as he was on with us a couple of shows ago, so be sure to listen to that interview. But yeah, I didn't mean to derail you there, but I wanted to get a cheap plug.
Yeah, no. I think he deserves recognition any way that he can, and he prefers quality to do the talking for him. You know, word of mouth. So if anybody has a 1502, they know they're going to get good quality, whether they, you know, read about it, or see it on the news or not. So I just hope going forward with these new regulations and the FDA and everything that hopefully that the quality can still be maintained and not be compromised too much. That's the only variable that we really don't have control over at this point.
Yeah. The one thing that me and Alan were talking about it a week or so ago with this Camacho and God, I'm probably going to butcher this name.
Coyolar?
Coyolar.
Yeah.
That they're bringing back, and we'll talk about it a little bit more on a future program, but I think you're going to see a lot of these existing names getting resurrected as a way to sort of circumvent the FDA stuff, because they can kind of say, you know, we were already selling this in 2005. It already existed. And we're just bringing it back.
So you're saying because it's an older brand name, they can use the excuse of a previous predicate date before what 07?
Yeah, it's we were talking about
because the pay.
Yeah, technically grandfathered is what we were talking about last week. So I think you'll see a lot of that whether it's the same cigar or not, you, me, God, or anybody would never know. But hell, if that is what it takes to keep getting great cigars, hell yeah, reuse the names. Who cares?
Yeah, I suppose so. So you think that's actually a smart move to that? You know.
And I think if obviously Camacho's doing it, Davidoff's thought it, so I think across all of their lines, I think you'll see more and more of that, of this sort of, you know, we're resurrecting the vintage whatever as a limited run, and just kind of telling the FDA, yeah, we sold this back in 2009. This is already in our portfolio, for lack of a better term.
Villiger did that. They released an old brand. That was number four or five cigar of the year. I think it was number nine. But Villiger released that that old cigar brand, because they did the short filler cigars for a long time, and they still do. I just thought that was interesting. I didn't really notice that trend until you pointed it out. That older brands, like, hey, we're just reviving. We're just Rocky Patel did that with the Decade. They take an old name and re-blend it and say, okay, so now that this name, it's to cheat the FDA. That's an interesting observation.
Yeah, anything to get one on the government is all right with me.
That's fine with me.
What about not to go completely political, but what about the whole North and South Korea handshake ending of the Korean War thing?
I don't know, because have they signed any documents, or is it just shaking hands at this point?
So far, I don't think there's anything on paper, but it all seemed to happen very fast to me. Like, 2 weeks ago, he's testing bombs, and now he's like down there shaking hands. Like, who threatened who with what?
And they're like smiling about it. I saw it on the news. I find it odd that they were at war for technically at war for so many years. And they said, all right, we're just going to stop. Like, well, why? What happened and transpired that says war? I hate my neighbors. War. Okay, everything's fine now. Like, it was a huge shift to just drop the whole thing.
Kim Jong-un also banged Stormy Daniels.
He may have. We don't know. Listen. And
maybe there's a tape.
There might be. I don't know. That's not a tape I'd ever want to see. I'll be honest with you. I don't want to see that at all.
No, because she's looking a little bit rough, and he's just weird.
Okay. So, on that same tangent, on the other side of the world, Raul in Cuba has stepped down. Right?
Mm-hmm.
He has stepped down as the supreme ruler of Cuba. In what I understand, my limited scope, Cuba has been under either communist or semi-communist, however you want to look at it, dictatorship rule for many, many, many years. And, you know, there was Batiste, there was Fidel, and then Raul. And now that Raul has stepped down, do you think that Cuba is ready to shift into a more democratic approach? Or do you think they have been so conditioned, like Stockholm syndrome, that they would not function properly without another dictator in place?
I think it's going to be a little bit of the latter. I think at least to a certain extent, they don't know anything else. They've lived under, depending on their age, possibly as many as two, maybe three dictators. And, you know, they've just been conditioned to this way of life. They've been conditioned to, I would assume, to some extent, hate democracy. I don't know. I think the big thing is going to depend on the percentage of older people in Cuba right now. If it's a mostly younger population, you might see some change, but if it's still largely older, I think they'll stay in a communist regime.
You think there's still a generation or two that are
are still going to promote that type of rule without shifting directly into democracy. And my concern is, I wouldn't argue that democracy is the only and best form of government for all people. It might be where they have adapted to that type of dictatorship leadership for so long, they may have had adjustments in place to sustain the country. I don't know if that's something that they want, but it's something that I think the country has just been accustomed to and got. And if you just said, okay, we're not going to be a democracy now, I don't know if they'd know what the hell to do, like voting and putting in, you know, our version of what senators college, what do you call them? The
electoral that's college.
Electoral college. Thank you. I don't know if they would be, I think that's going to take time to shift. And that's also something that the people of Cuba would have to want. So, I mean, Cuba is still making cigars at the El Higuito factory. They're still doing cigars and everything. And everybody's all like, you know, Cuba's under regime and their cigars are gonna faint away. Everybody wants Cuba to open up to the U.S. or U.S. to open up to Cuba. I'm going to tangent off just a little bit. If that happened and they said, okay, fine, there's no more sanctions, there's no more embargo, it's all gone. Do you really see an influx of Cuban products and goods, you know, their rum, their cigars, things like that? Do you really see a shift coming into the U.S. or is it just business as usual and we now can just go online and order the stuff?
I think there would be an initial rush of people who wanted it. You know, some of this crowd who think they've been smoking Cubans for 20 years anyway. And, you know, I think all of us to a certain extent would enjoy Cubans, but I think once you get them, once you try them, once you see the price, I think the newness would wear off very quickly. Truthfully, I'm rum is my least favorite liquor, so I would shudder to take a stab on what might happen there. But
okay,
in the cigar world, I think initial rush and then it just kind of fades away. And you know, a lot of shops would probably have a Cuban section, but I don't think it would be the revolution that some people think it would.
I mean, the embargo is pretty old, and you know, it's a stereotype that people have. And I've written an article on this, and I think, and we've definitely talked about this before, where people say, oh, you know, Cubans are the best, and, you know, only Cubans are the greatest cigars ever made. And we have seen from experience, you, me, and everyone else, where Cuban cigars, I've had a handful of them. I've not had a ton of them, I'll be honest. I've not smoked boxes and boxes of them. And for the few I've had, I have enjoyed them. You know, we had the one at Alan's house, the Romeo Julieta. I liked it, but I want to say there's a lot of emotional context that goes with that. Oh, I'm smoking something that I'm not supposed to have. To me, it's the same draw as, let's say, an 18-year-old when they are drinking beer and booze under the age of 21. You know, it's that feeling where when then you turn 21, you're like, oh, I can just go buy it. It's sort of it's not as I don't know how to describe it, but as appealing anymore because now you can just get it whenever you want. And in Europe, they smoke almost exclusively cigars. To them, Dominicans and Nicaraguans is rare. They don't smoke those as much. They smoke a lot of Cubans because they don't have that embargo. So I would argue that even if we got Cuban cigars here, I think they would be good. But like you mentioned before, with the price of them and the fact that I don't think that quality would be as good or worth its difference in price as what you could get with a bunch of Nicaraguans and even Dominicans. I love the quality of Dominicans and Brazilian wrapper. You know, that I think that quality is great and it's less expensive and in better supply.
Yeah, that Brazilian arapiaca leaf that Vicarious uses for the black, I'm a big fan of that particular leaf.
It is a wonderful leaf. And because it didn't come from a land of embargo, who's to say that that quality isn't as good, if not better, you know?
And let's face it, the Cuban suppliers don't give a shit because they don't need the U.S. market.
They really don't. I think that's kind of pompous for America to think that Cuba is struggling. They're selling tons of shit over to Europe by the shipload.
They literally don't smoke anything else over there.
Yeah.
I had a friend of mine, his daughter lives in London, and she took some pictures of humidors over there, and I didn't recognize a damn thing. I'm like, there's no Gurkha, there's no Rocky, there's no Alan Bradley, there's none of it.
They have Romeos and Monte Cristos and Trinidads and, you know, a bunch of Cuban brands, and I don't know. I think I'd be curious to see the shift and have a bunch of Cuban cigars brought in just to say that we have them now. But like you said, it would come like, oh, everybody can get Cubans now, and it would lose the appeal because now it's not, quote, illegal.
Yeah, it would lose that luster to, you know, be to throw a senior example in here out on the golf course. He's gotten big into golf again. But, be out on the golf course and be like, I've smuggled some Cubans in here in my shirt pocket. You know, let's smoke these.
Yeah, yeah. And for people, and you know, people will try to use it. It's like, oh, here's a Cuban. It's like, oh, it's something exclusive. It may not even be good, but because it's Cuban, we're going to emotionally, in our mind, think that it's delicious because, you know, it's Cuban. Now, Cuban cigars in the 90s, because the Nicaraguans and Dominicans haven't really built up yet, sure, probably the best quality that you could find if you could get them. But now that there's such an uprising in Central America and Brazil and everything else, you know, I don't think we have to have Cuban cigars anymore for good quality. No. So
it's strange to me. Like, if you just said to me 5 or 6 years ago that there was such a large cigar culture in this country, I would have been like, really? Because mm-hmm. if you don't smoke, you don't pay that much attention to it. But when you start smoking and you start digging around and you read the magazines and you see all the shops around, you start to realize how massive the non-Cuban industry has actually gotten.
It is huge. It rivals at least, if not topples, Cuban cigar. I mean, it's just, it's massive because one, they're cheaper and that's always appealing. And two, they can just grow in so much more supply without necessarily a dictatorship controlling every step that they make and letting people just breathe. Here's a field full of leaves, go do something with it. And they come up with these incredible blends with little to no restriction. They said, okay, so here's a bunch of field, and they grow what they want. They know what farms they want. They choose the plants, the seeds. And a lot of places, you know, use Habano seeds from Cuba and grow it in Ecuador or Dominican Republic or whatever. And you kind of get a little bit of both. And I think that's interesting.
Yeah, that's one thing to think about is a lot of the seeds are Cuban based in nature. They're just being grown on someone else's soil.
Yeah, I think that's genius without paying the Cuban price. Now, since we talked about Camacho before, you had asked a question on a choice between Camacho Corojo and Rocky Patel Royale. I want to know why you chose those two and what is it about them, why you chose those two to make a choice with.
Well, it's going to be a little bit of a segment going forward of sort of we picked two random cigars. Those were just the two random ones. I had two of them, one of each setting in my humidor, but it's going to be kind of a desert island scenario. You're going to be stranded. You've got one that you can take with you out of these two. Which one's it going to be? Lifetime supply kind of thing.
Yeah, you're stuck between these two, and that's all you get to choose from. Well, I want to hear your answer first, and then I'm going to make a choice.
I know I tend to be a big fan of most things Camacho, but in this particular case, I think the Royale is one of the better things that Rocky has done in the past decade. It was somewhere on one of the top 25 lists. I'd have to go back and see. I think it was either third or fourth, but I'll do some research for that on the next one. But just in terms of pure flavor, don't get me wrong, the Corojo is good, but that Royale was something really special out of his repertoire there. And it's got a lot of nutty chocolate kind of flavor notes going on. Just a real, real nice smoke.
I would have to agree. In 2014, it was the number 5 cigar of the year. So you were right. Since I've had both, and the Rocky Patel Royale is with the Ecuadorian Sumatra wrapper, to me, ends a little bit of sweetness. And I would say, from what I remember, it's not as peppery and full-bodied as the Camacho Corojo. I can see having the Corojo, which I have, but once in a while, because it is pretty full. It's got a lot of pepper, and it's pretty complex, strong cedar flavors. But there's something a little bit more finesse about the Royale. I really enjoyed that particular smoke. It's, you know, it's Nicaraguan, but that there's something about that Ecuadorian Sumatra leaf. It's difficult to grow, difficult to harvest, kind of like a Cameroon, but not that difficult. But it not only looks good, but it does have a delicious flavor. It's something you can really enjoy and not have to burn your olfactory glands to enjoy. So between the two, I would go with the Rocky Patel Royale.
Yeah, and some of it might be, you know, the Camacho Corojo is a Honduran Puro.
Yes.
And the Royale is a mixture of a couple of country blend, so it's got a little more, what's the word I'm looking for? I mean, flavor, obviously, but it's got a little more
complexity, little more balanced, I would say. I like when they do multinational blends. I've had a good run with that. There's just something about the leaves from different countries, like not canceling each other, but complementing each other when it's blended right. Whereas when you do a puro, you're stuck with that one country, and that one country may not produce all the multifaceted sides to give it as much complexity and balance as a multinational blend might do. So I do tend to like when they blend from different countries.
Yeah, I think with Puros, you kind of get all the leaves, regardless of exactly when they were harvested, seem to have kind of the same flavor, maybe different levels of the same flavor, but it's all sort of on that same wavelength.
Yeah, I think you're right. Different countries and different farms in different countries tend to have its own little profile. And when you mix a little profile of, let's say, sweetness of Cameroon and a little bit of boldness from Nicaragua and a little more finesse from Dominican Republic, when you start blending it all together in different parts, I think you just get this really nice flavor. I think it just really comes together as having a really nice flavor. And but some people really like the bold. They just want that strong, you know, kick you in the teeth kind of flavor, and that Corojo will do it. That Camacho Corojo is definitely for the full-flavored brand.
I met a guy in a Little Rock, Arkansas cigar shop who was like that. He's like, man, most of this stuff ain't hard enough for me. He's like, I just want to get punched in the face every time I smoke, and I'm like, I guess more power to you.
Yeah. Kentucky Fire Cured? Is that the one? That's the one you don't like, right?
Yeah, that's the bane of my existence.
Now, Senior likes it.
No, Senior hates it as much as I do.
Senior hates it. Who's the one that likes it? One Alan of us likes it.
Alan, of all Alan. People.
Really?
Yeah,
he thinks it's good. I thought it was Senior.
And then, well, Senior's best friend, Tim, is in love with him. He buys him by the box. Mm.
That's what it is. Yeah. Now I remember. It wasn't Senior, it was Senior's friend.
Yeah, Alan is very complimentary of them. To me, they're overwhelming with what they're going with there.
I heard you say it tastes like a used grill grate, like an outdoor grill. That's what it tastes like. You scrape the grill grate with all the parts that, you know, after you've used it for a year or two, that's caked on. You roll it up in a cigar and you light it. That's what it tastes like.
Yeah, I heard Kirk way, God, I can't even believe I remember this, but way back at the beginning of the show, he described a cigar, and I can't even recall which one it was at the moment, but he said it's a little bit like a dinosaur farting through your grandmother's dentures.
Oh, my Lord. Wow. What a cognitive image. Ugh.
Yeah, I've carried that particular insult with me through the years because it was so eloquent.
That will, yeah, that's very precise and descriptive and gross.
Borderline poetic.
Poetic.
In a disgusting sort of way.
Yeah, no, that's not something I want to experience in my life. And whatever that cigar is, I don't want it. But whatever it is, I don't want to try.
It's actually one I like. It's the CAO Brasilia.
Or you the like Italia. The Brasilia.
It was either the Brasilia. I like them both, but it was either the Brasilia or the Italia. I can't remember which one his hatred was shunned towards.
Well, Italians are hated more than Brazilians. That I know from experience from my people.
Yes, you're the only man I know who has an own fan club for his haters.
Yeah, it's true. I really do. I figured, why don't fight it? Let me ask you, you mentioned that you have been using a punch cut a lot lately. Explain to me, why have you been using that lately, and what are your thoughts?
Some of it has to do with the fact that we've been experimenting, me, Alan Sr., with the famous smoke shops, $1 cigars. So you get 20 for $20, basically. So I bought a sampler that had two of each. And some of them, and spoiler alert, most of them are actually really good, especially just for everyday mowing the grass, driving down the road type cigars. Yeah, they're actually really decent. They have one... they have a couple of lines off of it, but it's called the Artisan. They have a Nicaraguan, a Honduran, and I can't remember what the other one is off the top of my head, but that one, it's $1 a piece. It smokes more like a $5 or $6 cigar.
Is that right?
But to wrap around back to the punch cut, some of them are short filler.
Mixed filler or short filler?
Probably both.
Okay.
I think it's mixed, but you know, there's a little bit more of a chance with a straight cut or a V cut of getting some tobacco remnants in the mouth as you're making your way through the cigar. But the punch, the way it kind of caps that in there, prevents a lot of those little specks and surprises that it might leave behind.
I see. Yeah, when you do a full cut, it exposes more surface area, and you're more likely to get bits of the short filler in your mouth, whereas the punch keeps it, for the most part, closed and a smaller opening.
Yeah, it keeps it. And truthfully, the other reason is just really damn convenient, because I've got a lighter that's got one stuck in the bottom of it, so it's a one-size-fits-all package.
Okay.
Unless it's a torpedo, and then you're up creek.
I like punch because it's just so damn convenient. You put it on as a keychain, it takes up like hardly no space in your pocket, and you always have something to cut your cigar with.
I keep one. I've got one in my backpack, one I think in the console of the car. The Monte Cristo key is in the car. If you've never signed up and got that thing, sign up for their social club. Get that free punch. It's actually really nice.
What is this club?
The Monte Cristo Social Club. Sounds really snooty, but it's not. But yeah, they send you a free punch cut when you join.
Oh, all right. And it works well?
Oh, yeah. It's like you would probably pay $30 or $40 for it if you bought it in a shop somewhere.
So all you do is join their club. That's interesting. All right.
Yeah, as long as they're still doing it. I mean, it took like 3 months for it to show up, but it was like Christmas at the P.O. box one day.
All
right. It's like, oh, I remember signing up for that.
Interesting. All right. Well, that's something I just learned, so that will work.
And I do like free stuff.
Everyone loves free stuff. I like free stuff. Okay. Let's see here. Yeah, that pretty much. So I guess going back to the Camacho Coyolar, you'd mentioned that is returning, and we talked about how it sounds like they're using older brands, if for nothing else, just to take one at the FDA. And we're seeing a trend of that. So I hope I continue seeing a trend of that. Let's see here. So closing arguments.
And it kind of ties back real quick with the Coyolar that we were talking about earlier. I'm trying to remember, but I do believe it is a Honduran Puro. Yes.
Camachos do that a lot.
This one is going to be... it's a Honduran Puro using tobaccos all from the Coyolar farm, so that explains the name.
Okay.
But I'll look forward to trying it. You know, anything new catches my interest. Alan actually told me about a reasonably priced Gurkha that turned out to be good, and now for the life of me, I can't remember the name of it, so I'm going to have to have him mention that on the next show.
Okay.
Imagine that, praising Gurkha. What have we come to?
I don't know. We're going to have to talk about that in a separate segment as far as Gurkha, because almost everyone I know gives Gurkha a lot of flack. And I do see why. But I cannot tell you that I have smoked every one of their cigars. I cannot tell you that everything they make is awful. It just has kind of a stigma to it where, you know, there's a lot of not that great Gurkhas, in my opinion, and then there's a couple that are. But we don't want to give credit to those for fear it makes us look like, oh, that we're selling out. We don't want to do that. So it's kind of a fine line. And Gurkhas is one of those brands where it's a loyalist brand. People are like, I will only smoke Gurkhas or I won't touch them. And I think I'm not sure what's entailed to break down that stereotype. Say, okay, Gurkhas are as acceptable as other smokes. What do you find least appealing about Gurkha? What do you think?
Most of the time, it's the biggest thing with Gurkha is don't buy their own online stock, because you'll get something called the Gurkha Ghost that's nothing like the Gurkha Ghost that you would get buying from a brick and mortar store. And I've actually heard, we'll call it word on the street or knowing people behind the scenes, but the factory where some of Gurkha's cigars are made, you know, they've literally had Gurkha walk in the door and say, what have you got laying around that we can stick a band on? You know, then don't make a hill of beans difference what tobacco's in it. Just, I need this many cigars, put a band on it, let's go. Gurkha, in terms of reputation, it's a little bit like that porn video that you did in college.
That
sort of haunts you for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You know, you do one Bukkake video and suddenly you're a whore for life.
You're an outcast. So you're saying, so Gurkha one is an inconsistent quality supply.
Yes.
Is one. Two, they've created a bad image to begin with, and it's damn near impossible for them to make a comeback. I don't want to say make a comeback because it's not that they're not popular, but to regain the trust of people that they have lost.
Yeah, I think Gurkha is and will always remain popular with people who are maybe somewhere between 1 and 6 months into their cigar journey. Just for the simple fact that they have an incredibly well-known brand name and their boxes and labels are second to none.
When you were in the shop, did you recommend Gurkhas to newbies?
Generally, no. Because generally they would come in and they would say, you know, I'm relatively new. I need something light to medium. What do you want to recommend? And it would be something else. Because one thing I'll say about the vast majority of Gurkhas is they're on the medium to full, if not full side. You know, they don't, I couldn't tell you. I don't think they have that many Connecticuts floating around. I'm trying to think of any. But yeah, I mean, it's no, we would usually steer them towards a lighter Camacho or,
you know, Connecticut.
Yeah, the Camacho Connecticut, some of Rocky's earlier stuff, San Cristobal. I didn't have a problem recommending them. Alec Bradley had a few that wouldn't knock your head off. So there was a lot of other options, but you would always notice, especially the way that shop was set up, Gurkha was on the back wall. You would always notice eyes sort of flittering that way, looking at the, you know, the samurai and the pirate's chest and, you know, yeah, all the shit that comes with Gurkhas.
So did you have people come in and exclusively buy Gurkhas?
Yes. There were two customers that jump out in my mind. One, the only, and this is a slight sidetrack, but literally the only thing he smoked was Macanudo Maduros, and he wanted a box a month. The other was Gurkha. God, what do they call that one? The Red Witch. He would come in and get generally two boxes at a time. Never saw him buy anything other than that one, but it was always Gurkha. You know, he didn't seem to branch into the other Gurkha stuff. It was just that one.
Okay.
And don't get me wrong, the Red Witch is one of the half-decent Gurkhas out there, but I wouldn't want to smoke it every day as my exclusive cigar.
I see. So you noticed, from what it sounds like, people looked like they were drawn to it because of the marketing and the packaging. It was just so different and appealing.
Yeah, you would like. Get the, and it's kind of true of what they say. You eat with your eyes and you smoke with your eyes first. I think both of those things kind of apply.
So the more the more fancy and the more fancy the look of the cigar and the packaging, the better the quality must be, because they spent a lot of time and money to design this packaging. Therefore, that same quality and care must be in the cigar. And that, as we know from experience, that's not necessarily true, but it's perception, and to customers, perception is reality. So that's what people say. So you would have people come in and only buy Gurkha. I guess those are the diehard fans. But it doesn't sound like, in your experience, it's something you would start off recommending, because you said they tend to be full-bodied. There's not a lot of medium-bodied smoke of Gurkhas out there. And what about as far as even price? Did you find them to be as reasonable in price as anyone else? Or was it, were they always on the higher end of the price spectrum?
That's a little bit all over the road. I mean, the Red Witch was like $6. And this particular store carried everything up to the Triad, which was $50 a stick. So in terms of Gurkha, you had everything except the sub-basement price point available. If you wanted a $7, $8, and $10 cigar, it was there. If you were brave enough to spend $50 on a cigar, that one was there too. So they had a good price selection.
Do you find that kind of distracting? That, as I was saying before, with some brands that have such a wide variety, such a wide portfolio, they're trying to appeal to the $5 cigars and the Her Majesty's Reserve, which is $750 a stick, and trying to encompass and blast all customers. Do you find, in your opinion, that that's not the healthiest approach to cigars, because you're trying to cover so much, such a vast variety, that maybe it's difficult to juggle that many lines and keep the quality high?
Yeah, definitely. I think like Davidoff, for example, I think Davidoff is successful because they concentrate solely on the high-end market. You know, it's damn near impossible to find a Davidoff under $15. And, you know, you've got companies that stick, you know, exclusively to the low end of the market. I think they do good. But yeah, when you try to hit, let's say you want to range from $5 to $25, well, you got to hit 20 different price points now. Or, you know, at least we'll say 6 if you want kind of an even price point layout. So yeah, I think you get to the point where it's like, oh man, we don't have anything under $10. We gotta hit that $6 or $7 price point. You know, we've been working on Blend 32, you know, for 6 months, and not quite ready. You know what? Screw it. Just get it on the market, price it $6, and let's go.
That's the part that really bugs me is, you know, I don't. It's not bad that you only focus on one particular market. In fact, I think it's admirable to say this is what we make. This is the niche market, and we want to be the best at that market at this price point that we can, because there is a market for just about every range of price of cigar, everything from Davidoff down to the Flor de Olivas, you know, $3 smokes. There's always going to be a market for a certain select, and I would rather a company focus. Even like Davidoff, okay, we only make high-end, exclusive Dominican or whatever, or Nicaraguan cigars, and that's all we focus on. We don't want to cater to the $3 smokes because it would dilute the market that they want to focus on. If Davidoff started making $3 or $4 smokes, it would take away from the exclusivity of it all. And with Gurkha saying, okay, we are the same people that take short filler and cigar clippings from the floor and roll it as a mixed filler cigar for $2. But we also make this Her Majesty's Reserve for $750 that's been soaked in Louis XIII cognac. It's like, well, wait a minute. I have a difficult time taking you seriously on either front, because it sounds like you're just going to make whatever the hell you want to make to appeal to anyone that you want. Like, you know, you're trying to wear all the hats. That to me is my beef with a company like Gurkha. And I'm not saying the other smokes are bad. They may make wonderful. The Ghost, I actually like the Ghost, believe it or not. I'll concede to that. But it's just, I have a difficult time taking you seriously. It's kind of like if you go to a 4-star boutique restaurant that also has a drive-thru. You know, I can get fancy Italian or French dishes on the fly and have it delivered to the house. You know, there are some restaurants that are designed, we are only exclusive, we're only open for dinner, and we only serve this high quality food, the prices are this, and they stick to that. I don't want, you know, and then if I want fast food, I'll go to a fast food place that doesn't do high-end stuff. And I want somebody to focus on that one area. And it's confusing to me when a company says, we make everything from $3 to $750, we do everything. I don't want a company that does everything. I want a company that does one thing really well. One or two things, you know, because now you're in this range of just everything, and it's difficult to take them seriously. So I would be willing to smoke a few more Gurkhas to help understand that profile of what they're trying to accomplish. But it just, to me, it's just too much. I don't like that approach myself.
Yeah, Gurkha wants to be all things to all smokers, where Davidoff is the modern day version of the members only jacket, basically.
Yeah, and Kurt has talked about this in previous podcasts, where he thinks they're just a little more bougie and, you know, pinky up in the air, a little fancy, and that is true. It takes a Davidoff is not something that the average person is just going to go blow $400 on for 10 smokes. It's more expensive. You know, there are more affluent people who enjoy cigars, and they may like the Davidoff. It's just that it's that market, and they appeal to that market very well. They have yacht parties and fancy and all this. You know, it's that niche. But at least they do that, and they corner that market very well. For the people who enjoy that type of luxury lifestyle, they fit that profile very well. And I just... I don't want a company that says, oh, we can make smokes as good as, you know, look,
you know, there's Invictus, I think, is rolled at the same factory as that fancy Gurkha.
Yep.
You know,
all of Vicarious, all of Trade
actually rolled. Right. They make yeah.
factory that makes the 700 and whatever dollar His Majesty's piss cigar, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't care if it's soaked in Louis XIII rum. Does the cigar taste? And in fact, I discourage soaking a cigar in that type of rum, because now I'm tasting if I wanted to drink Louis XIII rum that's been aged for 30 years in a crate barrel in the southern France, I would want that. Don't mix the two. Keep them separate. I want the tobacco and the leaves and the quality and craftsmanship of the cigar to speak for itself. If you have to cover it up, say, oh, well, this has $5,000 or $50,000 rum soaked in it. Well, now I've got God knows what type of tobacco is in it and expensive rum. And now I can't separate the two and enjoy them as they're supposed to be. Now you've just blended two things that don't even, you know, I mean, I want rum to be rum. I want cigars to be cigars. And I will be the determining factor on what to enjoy at what time. But well, don't blend it for me and then charge me a fortune. I didn't ask.
From what I've heard, word on the street is it's they actually inject it with the fancy cognac, but it's like literally three or four drops. I mean, it's such a minuscule amount that it barely qualifies as being included.
Oh, so $750 just because there's some fancy cognac in it?
Yeah,
four drops worth.
And I would assume King, who is it, Louis the 14th or
King Louis the 13th?
Yeah, I mean, I would assume the cognac supply would eventually dwindle. So I would assume we're dealing with a finite resource. I don't know.
That's true. Maybe.
I mean, they can't dig the guy up and have him make some more.
He's dead. Or he's been dead for a while.
Can?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, when they run out of this stuff.
Then they're going to Trader Joe's. And they're getting Trader Joe's cognac off the wall.
Oh yeah, you see that to me. That discourages me from me taking you seriously as a cigar maker. I'm sorry, I just do, because you're not focused on making cigars. You're focused on fancying it up and doctoring it and cutting corners and using all this flair to cover it up and charging $750 just so someone can say, I spent $750 on this cigar. All that's telling me is that you have a bank account. That's all it means. It means you don't know shit about the quality of the cigars. You know even less about the cognac. And you just literally spent $750 on something you don't understand. I would rather spend $10 on something that is amazing. The 1502 XO is an amazing 18-year-old aged tobacco. Incredible smoke. And it's somewhere, a hell of a lot less than Her Majesty's Reserve.
Somewhere on YouTube, and I want to say it was Cigar Obsession that did it, but they were reviewing the $750 Gurkha, and they couldn't get the damn thing out of the glass tube.
That was Brian Glynn of Cigar Obsession. You are correct. And he spent, I don't know how long he spent, but he had to use like a pair of pliers to get it out of the glass tube.
Yeah, he damn near had to destroy the cigar to get it out.
$750, it should be delivered to me by a half-naked lady. Yeah,
you might want to specify a half naked, reasonably aged lady.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. I didn't say any age.
You don't want like a 67-year-old biker chick.
No,
dropping your cigar off.
No, not really. It's not my thing anymore.
Because I, speaking from experience, I've been to one of the most redneck bike rallies I've ever seen in my life.
NASCAR?
No, this was a literal bike rally in the Demopolis, Alabama, which is essentially an armpit of an already questionable state.
When you say bike rally, you talking motorcycles?
Yes.
Not like pedal bikes.
No, actual, you know, hogs. Motorcycles.
Okay.
No, the women who were walking around without clothes were hogs, but that's another story.
Oh,
another
yeah, thing. There you go. Oinks.
I saw breath that you could roll up as if you were rolling your own cigarette.
That is disgusting. You are a man of vivid imagery and not the pleasant kind. God, anyway.
Well, people express their creativity in different ways. Mine just happens to be disgusting.
Yeah. I'll concede to that.
Yeah, there was. It gave the effect.
So, what happened at this bike rally?
Back to the breast. It gave the effect of taking an Arby's roast beef sandwich and throwing it against the wall and just watching it slowly slide down. But no, the point of it all was that we were there smoking cigars and looking at unpleasant women. So what we were going for there was, you don't want one of those women, you know, presenting you with your $750 Gurkha.
No, that's what the point was. Right. No, I don't want that presenting my cigar at all. Now I remember. Yeah, I was so off topic with the roast beef being thrown against the wall. Like the Arby's beef and cheddar, you know, there's a little bit of stickiness in the cheddar and it just slowly slides.
Yeah, slowly. That is disgusting. And it actually, you know, it leaves like a snail trail as it comes
out. It's so gross. Why were you at this rally? You don't even have a hog.
Do what?
You don't even have a hog. What the hell were you doing at the rally?
I got dragged into, well, oddly enough, this is the same weekend that I was introduced to cigars. But I got dragged down there with Dad. And
this is how you got introduced into cigars? Yes. Roast beef sandwiches thrown against the wall at a fucking bike rally?
Same weekend, yes. Different part of, we were in a hotel at the time with the cigars, but I got dragged down there for that because they're like, oh, it'll be the most fun ever. And it was a primitive style of camping, meaning no running water, no electricity. I slept in the back seat of my car because I don't like sleeping on the ground.
No, you are in Alabama, man. I'll tell you, you really.
It was
encompass all things Alabama.
It was a rather unpleasant 48 hours.
So, you said that's where you got introduced into cigars. Was that the spike rally?
It was actually the night before at a hotel in Tuscaloosa.
Tell me about how that occurred. So, were you sitting with friends and somebody gave you a cigar, or did you just go buy one? How did you actually get started?
The group was my dad, Tim, which is his best bud,
yep,
and Joe and Gina, this couple from Florida that they were both friends with, and we had all gone to, I think it was Buffalo Wild Wings or something like that, and they were all previously into cigars, so this was back also when you could get a smoking hotel room relatively easily, so basically the after effect was, okay, we're going to go get a bunch of booze and we're going to go to the hotel and they were going to smoke cigars. So we were, I don't remember what the hell I was drinking, but I drank them all under the table. I was kind of proud of that fact.
Wow.
That's whatever.
Well, you were the young kid. You could process it better.
Yeah. They were all old. So
yeah. But, do you remember anyways, what it was? What did you?
Oh yeah, definitely. They were, Tim and my dad both at the time were big into the Nub, and they had Nub Maduro specifically, so that was actually my first one.
Interesting.
That's
interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that.
Smoked it and then drank, and I actually had two of them that first night, but yeah, that was the initial introduction.
So and when you had... Go ahead. I'll ask you.
The next night was the bike rally and the roast beef tits.
that's a term that's gonna stick almost like
kickball. Yeah, you'll be walking down the street one day looking at an old lady and you'll be like, she's got roast beef tits.
I'm gonna tell her that too, ma'am, you don't know this, but you got roast beef tits. Yeah, we've come a long way since Ken Ball.
You know, I was sitting here thinking to myself as the conversation went on, and you know, Alan not being here tonight, I'm like, it's really not good to leave us unsupervised.
This is how we wound up at bike rallies.
Yes.
So let me ask you. So you had the nub Maduro, right? That's a great smoke. I haven't had that in a long time. I gotta get back on those. What was it about it that made you think, okay, this is something I have to get involved with? What was it about it that appealed to you that says, okay, this is, because I mean, you're at a you're with friends and family, you have a cigar, and a lot of other people, I would even say most people who would have a cigar, they'd take a couple of puffs and say, oh, I can't take this. But you got appealed to it. You got attracted to it and decided to continue doing it. So what was it that drew you to it? Was it just out of habit, just to fit in with your friends and family? Or was it like, because then you started doing it yourself. So yeah. What drew you in?
Initially, the very first one, admittedly, was a little bit of the peer pressure effect. Like, oh, you know, go ahead and have one, you know.
Okay.
And, they let me kind of run the gauntlet with the first one, you know, cutting it wrong, cutting it badly. I took about damn near a half inch off the thing with the cutter.
Okay, but, so you're a neophyte at this, and that's forgivable. You didn't. It's fine.
Oh yeah, yeah. They got a good laugh out of it. But I mean, it was to some point. It was the flavors. I don't think at that time I didn't understand the complexity of it, but I knew I liked it. But yeah, there was a certain amount of. You could feel the camaraderie aspect of the cigar world just in that little section. And
so everybody was having a cigar at this point. It wasn't just you. Everybody else was having one.
Oh, yeah. I feel sorry for the hotel who had to clean that room the next day because it
had everywhere.
It reeked of smoke. I mean, it took smoking room to a whole new level.
Do they turn off the sprinklers, I would assume, in this room?
They would have had to because it looked like a poker den out of a 50s gangster movie. There may have even been an actual deck of playing cards laying around somewhere.
Is it like kind of like in Seinfeld when Kramer was going on this Cuban cigar kick and pipe smoke and he comes out of his room and there's just smoke billowing from his hair and his clothes and he comes out looking like gray ash? Like you look like an old catcher's mitt.
Like, I guarantee you that room never doesn't smell like cigars.
to this day, it still stinks.
they could tear that place down and rebuild it, and the smell would haunt the new building.
They'll freshly clean new walls, and it'll still smell like smoke because you guys left such a.
Yeah, they'd be like, where's that smell coming from? It'd be like a poltergeist.
I see.
But yeah,
so you
I mean,
mentioned...
the second okay, one, I had them actually like teach me how to cut it, and you know, they're like, okay, the first one I kind of went through in a blaze of glory. They're like, you know, slow down, you know, analyze it a little bit, try retrohale, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, the second one I kind of got into the groove a little bit. Everybody gave me a few cigars to take home, got to play around with it, and then shortly after that the senior found Patriot, which was Kurt's shop. And the rest is history after that. Once I got introduced to the shop atmosphere, I was hooked on it.
So was it as much the like flavor and complexity of the smoke? Of course, I know you didn't really, it was more so of just having it. Oh, you'd mentioned that it was the camaraderie around the people. So was it more so of the culture of cigar smoking or the act of cigar smoking?
Initially, it was more the culture that kind of turned me on to it.
What did you notice about when you just got started as far as the culture? You mentioned everybody sitting around talking. What was about that said, okay, this is something that I'm starting to grasp that I can see myself doing?
It was sort of that effect of, especially as I got into the shop game a little bit, of their just being essentially no strangers. You walk into a room, there's five people sitting here I don't know. 5 minutes later, we're all talking, joking around, having some random conversation. Cigars are the reason, quite frankly, that I know half the people I know. You, Alan, the entire Trey J crowd, Kirk, all these... our other
you've built
buddy.
Quite a network using cigars as the foundation.
Yeah, actually, I mean, like prior to this, I had like two friends. Like I was such a loner prior.
That's pretty pathetic. That's sad as hell. Don't cry. Play like some really sad, Mahler music here at the end.
Just for that, I'm gonna like, as soon as you say that, it's gonna like just drop in tone completely.
This podcast is going to go over, and all the audience is going, what the hell just happened? He's crying. It's all over. It's done.
Yeah, there's literally going to be like reviews of like, you two are not allowed to do this alone anymore.
Alan's going to get on there. He's going to say, you guys are idiots. Don't ever talk on my podcast again.
Yeah. I think that is a fascinating testimony. I really do, because there's a whole lot of similarity in how you grew into it as I did. And I want to say that a majority of people who actually are dedicated and, you know, inspired cigar smokers, people who do it themselves, really come into it in a similar way. And I think it's just growth, and you really do network, and your life can change in this culture. It genuinely can. And we have a basic understanding and, like you mentioned, camaraderie. And you can walk into a room full of 100 different cigar smokers, and for whatever, you have something as a basis that we all agree on, and that is the love of the leaf and how it makes you feel, how it helps people. I mean, the cigar industry, people don't realize, is a lot bigger than people think. And there's a lot of charities and goodwill and, you know, Cigars for Warriors, Soldiers Overseas. There's a lot of it's a multifaceted culture that brings it all together. And it just sort of, pun intended, draws you in. I know, it's a pun. and it just – and I'm fascinated by that. And I remember when I was was I in high school or early college? Maybe it was early college. And I went to there was an Italian festival that happened in Knoxville. And because I'm Italian, well, I had to go. And while I was there, a friend of mine bought me, it was a Romeo Julieta 1875 Bulli, Oro de Medaglia de Oro Robusto, basic cigar, like $8, whatever. And I didn't smoke it for a while, quite a long while. I smelled the tobacco. And that is what drew me in, was the aroma of the tobacco. I can't explain what the hell it was, what it did, but it was just, I have to get to know this. I have to be part of this, whatever this is. And then I started doing some research online. I started watching videos. I started looking at Cigar Aficionado when it was growing and all that. And I just got pulled into it. And then I started going to a local cigar shop, and I went to one downtown in Knoxville, and I started meeting people, and I started trying new cigars. I tried a Davidoff, and it was one of the smoothest cigars. I didn't even know it was possible for smoke to be that smooth. And I realized that I had stumbled upon something very special. And as I did more research and started growing a network of more people, I now have friends for life that I've known for years, including you and Alan, and, you know, to a small degree, Enrique Sanchez, and a host of others, because of this, because of these cigars. And I thought, my life has actually shifted, that I may have never known these people otherwise. And we all have something in common, and we all enjoy the same thing. And it's just, it's a wonderful foundation to build a friendship on. And, It's wonderful. It's a wonderful product, and it makes you calm down. It makes you relax.
That's another element of it for me, is it's one of the few Zen activities that I actually partake in. It's one of the few things in this world that actually does genuinely relax me. Whether it's smoking with people, or if I'm just sitting out on the porch, just sitting by myself, contemplating the meaning of life. You know, it's just one of those things that really literally makes you slow down.
You have to. You cannot take, you know, a, a,
a full-bodied Robusto cigar and smoke it in 10 minutes. You just can't. And if you try, you're going to regret it. It's going to hurt like hell. So don't do it.
I tried that once in my younger days.
And it didn't work. And so you realize, and I think it was a lesson to learn that it's not designed for that. It's not a 10-minute puff cigarette. It is designed to make you stop, because once you light it, to enjoy it, you have to slow down, and it forces you to chill. You have no choice, and you set time aside, and you take that hour, the 2 hours every day that I think everybody, every man and woman needs in their life, especially with juggling with work and family and everything. You need to set time aside to meditate and think and regroup, and that's what cigars do. That is exactly what they are designed to do, and all the while enjoying flavor and nuances, and you pair it with drinks, you have it with food. You have it with friends and family around a campfire. You do whatever you want, but it forces people together and sit there and talk and get to know one another, because you have something, a foundation to build on. And there's not many products out there that really do that. So I have a lot to be thankful for in the cigar industry. And I hope one day I can be a part of it in a professional manner. I really do. I study it as much as I can, but I hope to someday I want to grow in that industry. It's just, it's difficult right now.
Yeah, definitely. I think the whole FDA fiasco will have to settle down before there's any any significant opportunities that present themselves. But I think that's kind of, we're on that kind of same wavelength, as I want to, my dream is to blend a cigar, or maybe multiple ones if we want to dream big, but that's sort of my ultimate goal as a smoker, is to one day blend my own.
I think that'd be a wonderful endeavor, because even though it's hard work that I want to do. I would not mind waking up early to do that work. I would not mind staying late to do that work. It's one of those things where I would enjoy doing and not dread, because it's something that, like you said, if you're a blender, you want to work hard. You want to, because it's yourself that's represented in that cigar, and you want to put your best self out there. So you want to learn as much as you can about the fields, about the leaf, about the soil, about every part of the process, to put yourself the best self you can out there. And if you don't do that, then you fail. So it forces you to focus and hone and perfect your craft. Otherwise, you wind up like Gurkha.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And you don't want to do that.
No, you don't want to wind up like that porno you made in college.
What? Did you see my video or something? Is this on YouTube that I don't know about?
Well, see, I was at the dirty movie store the other day, and I was like,
there is no dirty.
I was like,
the dirty that, movie store.
Actually, we have Huntsville has three of them, so don't be like, oh, those don't exist.
Oh, that's what do you go like this Blockbuster with this curtain in the back room? Is that what it is?
Well, I can't say as I've patroned them, but I do know one of them is right across from the Burger King that I get breakfast at in the morning.
Go get two Whoppers and a porno.
I don't know. You might get three Whoppers in that scenario, but.
Disgusting.
But anyway, back to my story. Yeah, I'm walking around the shelves, and I was like, you know what? That kind of looks like Ben.
I have that face.
And it was, I don't know, on the back it said Benjamin Italian Stallion Valero. And I was like, that son of a bitch.
That's how I got into this, man. It starts with porn. Next thing you know, you're puffing Nicaraguan cigars. It just leads into it. It's the gateway. It's the gateway drug.
But yes, when that fateful day comes and you see that on Facebook that you get a notification that Mark Snyder has tagged you in a post.
That's what it is.
Probably not going to want to look at it.
It's a VHS tape with like that's like been halfway watched and not rewound. Be kind, rewind. Yeah, this one was for rewound. They couldn't wait to get it the hell out of there. People think that their VCR got a virus.
Yeah, there's gonna be a cute story attached to it. It's gonna be like, you know, I had to go down to the thrift store, the Goodwill, and find someone that actually still had a VCR,
and
convince them to let me come to their house and put this video in their VCR.
Yep.
Have them take their children outside.
Stay with their aunt. in another state and said, we'll come get you when it's done.
And then play it with the VCR while recording it on my iPhone.
That's your video conversion, is that?
Yeah, because I am not going to spend money on an actual video conversion because it would just be wasteful.
It's like $80 to get a DVD VCR converter. The Vinci Bass. Just record it on your iPhone.
That's $80 that I could spend on cigars.
Save that for the Majesty's Reserve pumps are building up.
And he manages to loop it all back in a circle right there.
Oh my. Wow.
All right. So this feels a little bit like the old days. The wheels kind of came off at the end here.
Well, we don't have a chaperone right now. So there's no one, there's no toll booth, and there's no checkpoint. We just say what we want.
It's kind of like that. And here we go again. Kind of like that Family Guy thing where Chris is at the TSA and getting felt up and he's screaming, I need an adult.
Yeah, that's what it is. I need an adult over here. Chris. I love Chris Griffin. He's one of my favorite characters in the show. I'm not going to lie. I love his work.
Yes. Seth Green is he's a funny fellow.
He doesn't have like a ton of lines per se. He has some episodes, but the ones he gets involved is fucking hilarious. I love Chris.
Yeah, the whole show is just the true genius of this Seth MacFarlane cannot be understated.
No, it can't.
American Dad, too.
Yeah, we're watching. Did we finish it? I think we might have. I think we watched all of up till the last season. I've watched all of Family Guy, and I think we've watched all of American Dad so far.
Yeah, if of the many things that may change on this show over the years, I will never give up Roger as our intro person.
No, please don't. He is an icon. He's a hero and a legend. Ricky Spanish.
My favorite one, I can't think of it. It's the episode where, what do they call it? Roy Rogers McFreely.
Oh yeah, and he's running for council to run the city or whatever, to put a street, and he puts a street lamp that just burns like 1,000.
Alan would actually love that that episode because Roger takes over the homeowners association.
That's what it is. He takes over the HOA. He fucking hates the HOA. I forgot about it. Roy Rogers McFreely, and he did all of that because he wanted grenadine for his drink. And because he didn't get grenadine, he took over the homeowners and made Nate Stan's life a living hell. Oh, it's funny. It is funny.
And I think they actually murder the black neighbor that's an agoraphobe who doesn't like to come out of his house. Well, they drag him out of his house and then he has a heart attack, I think.
Like, are you home? I know you didn't. I know you're still there because you haven't left. And this speakerphone, he starts using him as a hammer.
speakerphone.
He goes, you know, and then Haley tells Stan, he goes, you know, these people have names. Shut up, tits. Calls him tits. The speakerphone. It's like, these people have names.
I could do an entire show just talking about Family Guy and American Dad.
I know. I've got to get going. I got to shower and dinner's on the table, so.
Yeah, I'm sure your wife would appreciate you showering. As well as the
neighbors. It would be nice. And the customers and the neighbors and everybody else, yeah.
I know it only happens like twice a week, but, you know, you got to keep it on schedule.
It's going to rain tomorrow. No, day after tomorrow, so I might just wait till then. Step outside. Yeah.
Whatever
works. Gross.
That would be like, I don't know, but that would be like, you'd be green and saving the environment. Not wasting water.
Right. I would use it. And I would stand out in the parking lot naked and just shower in front of God and country and everybody.
And then Ben would lose his job and be homeless. And
yeah.
No more cigars for Ben.
No more cigars for Ben.
Would you really be that douchey homeless guy who brings his dog out to the corner with him?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I would sit there with my dog. I'd be riding around on a bike with my dog leashed to it, so we'd have to run and pedal together. That's what I would do. I'd have an army jacket on with a fake name, and I would have a pair of boots on, but not laced, just on. What else? Jeans, no belt, and...
And you got to have like a Gilligan's Island hat to catch the money in.
I definitely have a hat on, maybe a ball cap, but not backwards, definitely forwards. Long hair, not shaved for many a week.
Would you drag a shopping cart full of stuff?
No, you? I wouldn't do that. I would steal like a duffel bag and probably use that, but I can't do the shopping cart thing. That's just too much hassle. And those little wheels, they're never fucking straight. Ever. There's always one that's just wonky and wiggly, and that's just too much noise. I can't do that.
Glad you're worried about the noise ordinance in the neighborhood there.
As a homeless man, I'm concerned about noise ordinance. Will you help a 49er?
And I don't know anything that we can end the show with better than that. So this was the Cigar Tipsters Podcast. Good night.
Good night.